Perhaps anything that is said from this point on will be an anticlimax to the worship that we've already experienced. I was trying to advise Jack of a song that would fit the message of the hour, but listen to this verse in the first song that we sang, verse 3, cure thy children's warring madness, bend our pride to thy control, shame our wanton selfish gladness, rich in things and poor in soul. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage, lest we miss thy kingdom's goal. The lesson this morning is designed around the theme of pilgrims on earth. That will not be the text, but we'll bring it up at the end of the lesson and make the application. The text that I want to take as the text for the lesson is found in Matthew, the 6th chapter, 3 verses, 19, 20, and 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. May God bless the reading of His Word, and may He bless us as we study. I think perhaps that this passage here may very well prove to be one of the, if not the most pivotal and practical passage in all the New Testament. Now that may be a very broad, sweeping statement, but I say that because of the fact that it deals with the heart. It's pivotal. You can't get any more central than that. And it also deals with a practical, concrete demonstration of how we may determine where our heart is. So I say it's pivotal and it's practical. And I think probably we'll see that it stands at the very top of the list of verses that you and I will have to face and deal with in our lives as Christians. This morning, very simply, I want to deal with the injunction that Jesus gives in verse 20, or verse 19, really, and verse 20. And I want to deal with the simplified version of it, to where it just simply takes the two injunctions, not the reasons that He gives, just the injunction. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. These two simple injunctions from the Lord are going to have to be dealt with by every person in this audience and in this materialistic age in which we live. What did Jesus mean when He made these two statements? One is in the negative and one is in the positive. He guards it from the front and the back. Now remember, He's Lord. His slightest wish will be our command, will it not? Are we all committed to that one basic premise, that Jesus is Lord and that His slightest wish will be my command, and that whatever He says, I'm going to do? I think it will have to be said, first of all, that this is one of the passages with which we struggle until we are literally blue in the face to understand. And then we struggle all over again for some way of explaining it away and compromising it so that we can get away from the stark reality of it. Because I'm convinced that we're not capable at the present state of our minds and thinking, we're not capable of dealing with it in its starkest form, in its barest form. He simply says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves rather treasures in heaven. Now, lest you go away thinking that I'm an extremist, let me say that a person does not understand the teachings of Christ unless he is aware of the fact that Jesus Christ was very seriously concerned about people having material needs. But he was also concerned about people not being victimized by things. He wanted you to have what you need, but he didn't want you to be victimized. He wants you to live free of the tyranny of things. But Jesus wasn't an ascetic. He didn't require that you withdraw from life. In fact, the very Lord that told the rich young ruler, "You must go and sell all that you have," was quite satisfied to tell Zacchaeus, after Zacchaeus said, "I'm going to give half of everything that I have to the poor." The same Lord that required all of the rich young ruler said, "This day salvation has come to the house of Zacchaeus." What's the difference? Well, the difference lay in the fact that it was in the man himself, that one was trusting in the riches and the other wasn't. But the same Lord also that told us to do good to the poor, whenever Mary anointed his feet, or his head, I think it was, with the ointment, and the disciples rebuked her for doing this deed to Jesus, this same Jesus that said to do good to the poor rebuked his disciples and said, "Leave her alone. She's done a beautiful thing to me. And wherever this gospel is preached in all the world, this will be told in her honor." So you see, Jesus, he wasn't an ascetic. He didn't require us to leave the world. He knew that we needed things. He healed the sick. He fed the hungry. And yet in all that he did, he made it crystal clear that we were not to allow material values to be the goal upon which we set our eyes. And yet, we find that this is one of the major threats to the effectiveness of our ministry. I'm humbled before this passage. I don't quite know how to deal with it, and I don't know that any of you knows. Is there anyone here who knows exactly where to draw the line? How do you do it? Cut it however you will. Jesus Christ was interested in our having material needs, and yet he was just as interested in our not being tyrannized by these things that we so often find oppressing us. Jesus spoke very bluntly about things. He said in Luke, the 12th chapter, "A man's life does not consist in the abundance of things that he possesses." If you pare that down to its very barest form, he simply is saying that a man's life does not consist in things, or life does not consist of things. That's all he's saying. Do you believe that? There are two expressions that he uses here in the 6th chapter of Matthew that I think need our attention. They need defining. One of these expressions is the expression Gentiles. Do you know what he means when he talks about Gentiles? It comes from the word ethnoi or ethnos, the nation or the nations. But what does he mean? I wish the translators would do some retranslating. I wish they would bring it up to date about 20 centuries, because we've missed the meaning of it. We don't have it topside nor bottom. We haven't touched it. Do you know what he means here when he says, "Do not be worried about what you're going to eat or what you're going to drink or what you're going to wear"? Because the Gentiles are interested in all these things. Do you know what he means when he says Gentiles there? We have some far-off concept that he meant some heathen nations back in the time of Jesus in the first century and all. That's not what he's talking about. He's saying that you ought not to be concerned about what you eat or what you drink or what you're going to wear, that it is these things that the contemporary American society in which we live, it's these things that this kind of a society is interested in. That's all he's saying. And it drives home to us this lesson. Are you prepared? Are you, as an individual follower of Jesus Christ, prepared to live your life in a vein or on a plane that is significantly different from that plane upon which the people in this community live their lives, or upon which the people in our society live their lives? That's all he's asking you. He says you're not to live your life pursuing the same goals that the people in the society around you live their lives pursuing. That's what the word Gentile means. It just simply means the contemporary materialistic society in which everyone lives if he's living in the world. And he says, my people are not to be like that. The other expression that he uses is the expression here, the treasures of earth, or treasures on earth. Do you know what he means by that? Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves rather treasures in heaven. He develops it both negatively and positively. Will you look at it with me negatively, probably, primarily, and then if we have any time, we'll look at it positively, just briefly, and then I want to draw a conclusion from Hebrews, the 11th chapter, and the lesson is yours. But what did he mean when he says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth? I think we'll have to we'll have to conclude first that he was not limiting this just to money. That's not all he was talking about. He was not just speaking to the rich. He was speaking to everybody. I think it's necessary for us to draw this conclusion for the simple reason of safety, because if I just simply limited it, and if he had limited it just to money, most of us in this auditorium today would have sat back and thought, well, he's preaching to the person beside me, or he's talking to somebody else. There ain't nobody around here, Rich. Too many of us are teachers. But that's not what he's talking about. Oh, obviously it's at the top of the list. This is the most practical way that our treasures take their shape. This is the most practical shape that they take. But that's not all that he's talking about. That's a very narrowed, limited interpretation of this word treasures. Just like when Paul wrote to Timothy and said that the love of money is the root of all evil. He didn't say money was. He said the love of money is the root of all evil. So Jesus here, when he says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures, he doesn't say, do not lay up for yourselves money. He calls these things treasures. And consequently, we're faced with a broader application than we would have been had he just simply said, don't store up for yourselves large bank accounts. But that's the way we mostly take this, but that's not all that it means. What is he talking about? Jesus is saying here, whatever you treasure in this life, in the way of a physical, temporal possession that you possess as an end in itself, rather than as simply a means to an end of the glory of God, that thing has become a treasure that is upon the earth. Whatever you treasure, whatever you work for, whatever you spend your time thinking about, whatever it is that you store up, whatever it is that you value, whatever it is that you take into serious consideration and base your hope upon, either for pleasure or for security. And that gets every one of us in the audience today, in the congregation. Those of us who are those of you who are younger, you do it for pleasure. Those of us who are older, we're caught in the snare of security. Jesus is saying, whatever it is that you treasure for pleasure or security, and these things overlap and interweave in many very significant ways, but we're going to simplify it and just separate it today. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that, but to just simply clarify it and say, whatever you treasure on earth that's of a physical, temporal nature that you hold on to as an end in itself, that becomes actually what Jesus is talking about here when he talks about treasures on earth. It may not be money for you. You may be a poor man. It may be your wife. It may be your husband. If you've got your hope set in him or in her, and are like a woman who told me recently, when I warned her that this union between you and this man that you're proposing, this union may very well send you to hell. And this woman told me then, if marrying him means that I go to hell, then I will just go to hell. How foolish. One day the worms are going to be crawling in and out of his body, eating him up just like they eat everything else up. He's not going to be here always. It may be your relationship to your mother and father. There are people who literally come undone when their mother or father pass away. There are people who lose all contact and all association with reality when some member of the family, particularly their mother or father, dies. Is that the way your life is arranged? That's too much. Many people just sign off whenever mother or father dies. That's not good. Anyone who puts that kind of an emphasis on a mother or a father is laying up treasures on earth that are going to rust and rot and one day decay, because mother and father is not going to live forever. You've got two choices. You can either let your life end with them, or you can let your life go on after they die. But it's up to you. Jesus says, don't lay up treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. It may be a car. You boys. It may be a car. I've seen you polishing your gods. Did you ever polish a god? Oh, I've polished gods before. With four in the floor. Or three on the tree. It doesn't make a difference what it is. You can polish that god, and you can so wrap your life up in it that you know what you'll do? And you parents sometimes are just as guilty of it, because you'll make a down payment on one of these gods for this child, and then you'll leave him with the ticket, even if you think you're doing it for his good, you'll leave him with a ticket of some $2,000 or $3,000, and he spends the rest of his life laying up treasures on earth that are going to rot and rust and decay. It can be a car. It can be a house. It can be a house that's such that it takes all that you can earn and all that you can beg, borrow, and steal, and you have to work day in and day out. You don't even have time to live because of the fact that you've overextended yourself for just simply a roof over your head. And another roof that would cost a tenth the amount, or maybe a fourth of the amount, will keep you just as dry as the roof that you're now giving your entire attention to. It may be cosmetics. Do you realize how much money is spent on cosmetics to make you look like you're something that you're not? Don't lay up treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. Now, I don't know how much you spend on cosmetics, but I'm telling you what, if at the end of every day you wash yourself down the drain, you're wasting money. And there are millions of people spending billions of dollars trying to make themselves look like something that they're not. What about hair transplants? Or facelifting? And I'm dead serious. I think these things are a literal striving after the wind and a laying up a treasure on the earth that cannot possibly endure. Let me ask you a question. Can you imagine Jesus of Nazareth getting a hair transplant? Can you imagine him getting his face lifted? I can't. Can you imagine him being all uptight because his seamless robe happened to be out of style that particular year? And yet, I don't know of a way in which we're all guilty of it, we're all victimized by it. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth. It doesn't make any difference whether it's house or car or cosmetics or a hair transplant or whatever it may be. Jesus is simply saying, don't try to hold on to that you can't keep anyway. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where there is no deterioration, there is no decay, there's no rusting, and there's nobody that will enter in and rob you of these things. And yet every year, here we go, following like sheep along a shepherd, as Fifth Avenue from New York dictates what kind of clothes we've got and whether our lapels are narrow or broad. And they'll enter in every couple of years, and they'll rob every one of us here today of the clothes that we've put so much money in. And after it's all over and they've robbed us of it and made a fool out of us, and they laugh at us because we have, just like the rest of the Gentiles, we've allowed them to come in and steal from us that which should have been given to God. And as a result, we've laid up treasures on earth and the moths and the rust have corrupted, and the thieves from Fifth Avenue have broken in and stolen. Brethren, if that's not the teaching of Matthew, the sixth chapter, I don't know one word from another. And I'm as guilty of it as you are. There's a pile of clothes on my table that I'm trying to get down to the nearly new nook, and I wish you'd stay open sometime besides Saturday. I can't get it down there to you. But you know what? They're these little thin lapels, and you'd think me a kook if I were to stand here in the pulpit with one of them on. I don't really care. I wear them sometimes, but we're victimized by these things. These are some of the things that it may mean. It may mean honor. It may be trinkets of honor. Not just trinkets of gold, but trinkets of honor. In John, the 12th chapter, Jesus, or John, says there of the rulers of the Jews, that even many of them believed on the Lord, but because of the fear of the Pharisees, they wouldn't confess it because they love the glory that's of men more than the glory that's of God. This is an intangible aspect of it. There are many people who hold on to their parents' opinion of them and would keep them from doing the will of the Lord simply because of the fact that mother and daddy they wouldn't like it. Or my husband or my wife would kick me out if I were to obey the gospel, or whatever it may be that causes you to hold on to whatever you may be holding on that is a symbol of security for you. Jesus is saying that is laying up treasures on earth and rather than in heaven. In John, the 5th chapter, Jesus said there that these people were anxious for honor from one another. He said, how can you believe who show honor to each other and the honor that comes from God you don't desire? We're guilty of laying up treasures on earth rather than treasures in heaven. I think many times preachers fall victim to this same illness. They allow a congregation's wants to determine what they preach rather than the needs. And they'll allow their security, their position of security, they don't want it to be threatened. So in order to maintain and secure that position, they will attempt to appease the congregation with their wants rather than what they really and truly need. That's laying up treasures on earth. I think it's possible for schools to do that. There's a man over in Knoxville that I met just recently. God have mercy on his soul. Perhaps I saw a speck in his eye and I may have a beam in my own. I don't mean to. If I'm criticizing him, then God forgive me. But I've never seen a man so bent, bound and determined on earthly present day approval of his life. He spent an hour telling me of all the churches that he had established and all that he had done for them, all the while insisting that really it wasn't himself. He spent another hour trying to get me to give him some impression of a little speech that he had given, and he had told me about all the people who said it was the greatest thing they'd ever heard. And I began to think, sir, your values are in the wrong place. And I began to wonder if perhaps many things that we do, when we do them for honor from people in time rather than doing them privately and in secret for God, if perhaps we're not again laying up for ourselves treasures on earth rather than on heaven. That's some of the negative. Are we guilty of any of this? I think we are. Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but rather, he says, lay up treasures in heaven. What does it mean? Very briefly, I want to read two verses and then draw a conclusion. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verses 17 through 19, this is what Paul told Timothy. As for the rich in this world, charge them not to be haughty nor to set their hopes on uncertain riches, but on God, who richly furnishes us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good deeds, liberal and generous, thus laying up for themselves a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life which is life indeed. That's a statement to the rich. But there's a statement made to the poor, or just simply to people, in Luke 12:33, when Jesus said, sell your possessions and give to the poor, so that you may have purses that don't grow old. Sell your possessions and give them to the poor, so that you may have purses that do not grow old. How do we do this? How do you go about developing the kind of a frame of mind that will allow you to sell things that are possessions of yours, things that are not just pleasures, they're treasures? How do you go about selling those things? I think you have to develop a kind of mentality. You mentioned this mentality this morning in the lesson. These people had developed a slave mentality. They had developed a mentality of Egypt. And it was the hardest thing to get these people out of their Egyptian mentality. We're in the same condition today. We're having the hardest time in the church today. Christians are in this 20th century affluent society. We're having a hang of a time getting ourselves out of this kind of a mentality into the kind of mentality that the Bible calls the pilgrim mentality. The pilgrim mentality. I'm confident that until there's a reshuffling of our entire thinking, a restructuring of our entire value system, I'm afraid that we're going to, like the song says, miss the purpose of the kingdom. Because I'm confident that we spend much of our time dabbling in things that are the treasuring up of treasures that are on the earth rather than those that are in heaven. Are you able to resign yourself to the fact that you're a pilgrim? It's not easy. The Jewish people of Jesus' day, or of the days of Moses, they didn't find themselves easily adapting themselves to this mentality of a pilgrim. They would rather have been back in Egypt, where everything had been supplied. And the question that they asked themselves in this lesson today that you taught us, the question they ask is God really among us or not? Whenever they didn't get the things that they were wanting and the security of the Egyptian economy and all, when that began to hit them in the face and the starkness of the desert really caught up with them, they began to look around and say, is God really with us? I think we're going to have to adjust ourselves and adapt ourselves to a pilgrim mentality. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verses 13 through 16, this statement is made concerning that great honor roll of faith. These all died in faith, not having received what was promised, but having seen it and greeted it from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. The slave mentality was no longer in these people. They had a pilgrim mentality. Can you say this with any gusto or sincerity? I will not possess anything that I am unwilling to sell in order to advance the kingdom. I will not possess anything that I will be unwilling to sell if I can find that I can make better use of it for God's glory in another way. Until we can say that with genuineness, I think we're still lacking the pilgrim mentality. We accumulate a lot of things. And you know how long it takes for you to accumulate just junk when you move. Everybody ought to move at least every 2 years. Just simply to get rid of the junk you accumulate. But you know what? When a Christian, as he goes down through life, accumulates things, should there not be maybe an annual garage sale just to accumulate the things that we don't even want? If we would have an annual garage sale, just everybody have a garage sale and take that money and pool the resources, well, I can't even begin to imagine how much money we would get just getting rid of things that we don't need. Do you travel much? If you do, you've learned to travel light. I should have learned that lesson long ago when we came back from New Zealand in 1970, got out there to the plane, you know, and we were all weighted down, all five of us had all we could carry. We loaded in about 200 pounds overweight. Well, frantically, while the plane waited almost, we took off to somebody's house, opened up the bundles, started throwing stuff out, just weighing it, you know, and throwing one here and there, typewriters and everything else. Got it all back together, got back on the plane with just the bare necessities. I don't even miss anything. I don't know what we left. It doesn't make any difference what we left. We didn't need it. Last year on the trip to New Zealand, I should have learned that lesson, but I didn't. I took a great big suitcase in one hand and a huge thing full of suits, you know, that hung over the shoulder in a garment bag, that after carrying them from one depot to the other, you feel like a zombie. And I carried, I did all that, plus I had a suitcase or a briefcase under the other arm. I looked deformed, you know, walking through. But I'll tell you what, this last trip, I told my wife, whatever I can't get in a small suitcase, throw it out. I don't want to take it. I put my suit in there, one change of shoes, just the very barest necessities in order to make that trip. Now, that's a pilgrim mentality when it applies to just simply mundane things. A friend of mine told me the other day, he had bought a piece of ground. And some wise man, I don't know who he was, but some wise man asked him two very foolish questions, he thought. He asked him, do you know who owned that property 100 years ago? And the man said, why, no, I don't. He said, do you know who's going to own it 100 years from now? He said, why, no, I don't. And then he made this very astute observation. He said, then, you know, it appears as though you are just passing through. We're pilgrims on the earth. And brethren, I'm confident that until we face that fact and start living in accord with it, I'm afraid that this principle in this song, that we're going to miss the purpose of the kingdom. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves rather treasures in heaven. Make your decision. And it may be that you need to make it right now in obeying the gospel. You may have to turn your back on mother and father, on brothers and sisters, upon husband or wife. You may need to come forward and confess that you want to be on that train that's leaving. You may want to be one of those pilgrims. If you do, make your statement. Though the rest of us here are Christians, make your decision now whether you're willing to sacrifice everything in order to be one of the followers of Jesus Christ. It's not easy. He requires a pilgrim mentality. Do you have it? May God bless us to achieve it while we stand and sing.
Jesus is tenderly calling me home, calling today, calling today.